for the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, the usual reminder to subscribe to and to support our work, and greetings to people in the land of the rising audience, Japan, number 28 on our list of all-time views by jurisdiction. Followed by some obvious stuff hidden in plain wallet. Here at CDN, we get a steady stream of notifications like rooftop solar's in trouble, or the clean energy manufacturing boom is going bust, or tax credits throttled, or with little explanation, Trump throws the wind industry into chaos, end quote. All of which mean that without subsidies, alternative energy is not an unstoppable revolution, but something that costs so much that people don't want to buy it, or, in consequence, invest in it. More bluntly, it costs more and works poorly. But the debate on climate is apparently not the place for such plain speech. Instead, the New York Times warned, quote, the Trump administration is preparing to terminate $7 billion in federal grants intended to help low- and moderate-income families install solar panels on their homes, according to two people briefed on the matter, end quote. Now, why it is, if they're cheaper, that poor people need to be paid to switch was ignored in place of stale propaganda, quote, the idea was to reduce the use of fossil fuels, the burning of which is dangerously heating the planet, while also helping to lower electricity bills, end quote. But if they lower electricity bills, at least to the end user, then surely people struggling to make ends meet will flock to them the way they do to discount stores. And the story gets worse. The Times take on Trump ordering a halt to construction at Revolution Wind off the coast of Rhode Island was predictably, quote, legal experts say there is little basis for blocking the project, end quote. But Matthew Wielicki explains that Revolution Wind, which he calls, quote, Ørsted's bloated offshore brainchild, end quote, does offer power, quote, at a locked-in 9.8 cents per kilowatt hour for 20 years. Cheaper than New England's retail average? Sure, but only if you ignore the massive subsidies propping it up, end quote, which most media accounts do, as they ignore the admittedly rather vague national security concerns behind the cancellation, and the extremely obvious and extraordinarily destructive ecological impact of this green energy. Unlike Wielicki, who adds, quote, picture this, massive steel monopiles up to 12 meters wide for turbines, 15 for substations, hammered into the seabed like industrial spikes. Each gets a rock apron, devouring 0.7 acres, stacking 2 to 4 feet high to fight erosion. Total toll? 190 acres of mangled seabed and a 97,000-acre lease, plus 155 miles of inter-array cables and 42 miles to shore, buried 4 to 6 feet deep but still scarring the ocean floor. This isn't clean energy. It's an underwater industrial zone, end quote. Worse, a lengthy article by Michael Schellenberger explains that the Biden administration knew that the offshore wind projects it was permitting, promoting, and subsidizing violated the 1970 National Environmental Policy Act, and that Revolution Wind in particular was, in quote, a crucial magical space for marine animals at risk of extinction, end quote. But somehow mainstream journalists failed to discover these lies, perhaps because they're essentially propagandists, not dispassionate and skeptical observers. And, speaking of the obvious, some people still bow down before the idol of peer review. But here's a ghastly story from Nature magazine, which boasts of being, quote, a weekly international journal publishing the finest peer-reviewed research in all fields of science and technology, end quote. Or rather, a ghastly story about Nature from Roger Pilkey Jr. about a study that was as absurd in content as it was feeble in methodology, but danced right through their finest peer review and proved highly influential in academic and policy circles before a critical review blew it to bits because it depended on a data error involving, of all economic irrelevancies, Uzbekistan. And as Pilkey Jr. explains, quote, the paper's extreme results got a lot of attention. According to Carbon Brief, in all of 2024, KLW24 was the second most mentioned climate paper in the media, end quote. And, he adds, it, quote, quickly found its way into important policy settings, including the U.S. Congressional Budget Office, the OECD, the World Bank, and the U.K. Office for Budget Responsibility, end quote. And at the Eco-Modernist, whatever that outfit might be, Jessica Winkle warned, quote, at stake is monetary policy all over the world, end quote. Hello, Mark Carney, Green Central Banker extraordinaire. Alas, the methodology was flawed and grotesquely exaggerated the potential damage. and it glided right past that vaunted peer review. In the newsletter, we also continue our Scorch Watch. Though as fall closes in, we forecast fewer uses of scorch and sore in weather reports for 7 to 9 months until summer surprises journalists by returning. But the Weather Network is hanging in there with, quote, BC and Alberta roast in late August heat as records fall, relief out of reach, end quote. And no, they didn't find a synonym. The piece also says, quote, the last week of August is turning into a scorcher in Western Canada, with BC and Alberta experiencing relentless heat, end quote. And us experiencing relentless rhetoric. Ah, record heat watch. Those records, meanwhile, are artifacts, like Edmonton having, quote, a high of 30.2 degrees Celsius, which the city has only witnessed twice before in July 2024 and June 2021. It has never happened in August, end quote. So, it's a non-record record, and yes, it's measured at the airport, and it seems to be completely false, because Edmonton Weather Records reports a high of 35.6 there on August 18th, 2008. It seems that the story may have mixed up the temperature with a 7-day streak of hot days, but who expects a journalist to check facts while sowing climate panic? Ah, and then our title, Death Watch. The Daily Mail actually hollers yet again, quote, West Antarctic ice sheet is on the verge of a catastrophic collapse, sparking 9.8 feet of irreversible global sea level rise, scientists warn, end quote. Wake us when it doesn't. Or don't, because The Guardian promptly shrilled, quote, collapse of critical Atlantic current is no longer low likelihood, study finds. Scientists say shocking discovery shows rapid cuts in carbon emissions are needed to avoid catastrophic fallout, end quote. And another thing. The Washington Post writes with a straight typeface that, quote, Trump rolls back rules meant to keep politics out of climate research, end quote. Right. And there was none of that in the Obama-Biden years. At least none the Post is aware of. For instance, that survey that says 7 of 8 federal scientists are Democrats. Now, I want to mention here that after many years in the policy trenches, we at CDN are aware that it's easy, perhaps too easy, to accuse people that you're arguing with of being blind to the facts because they interpret them differently, whether or not you then add the pejorative ideological. Nevertheless, we wince at headlines like The Guardian's, quote, dramatic slowdown in melting of Arctic sea ice surprises scientists, natural climate variation is most likely reason, as global heating due to fossil fuel burning has continued, end quote. At least they saw what was happening and mentioned it before denying it, and they admitted that they weren't expecting it. What's worse is the tendency of alarmists to see what isn't happening or not to see what's right in front of their faces. For instance, a New York Times columnist just wrote, quote, the global landscape is now inarguably dominated by two rival superpowers, the United States and China, and in the post-pandemic period, one of them gambled hugely on AI, while the other wagered hugely on green technology. The future now hangs in the balance while we wait for the bets to come in, end quote. Oh, really? And I don't just mean time may tell, which is not a great thesis for a piece of opinion writing. I mean that even Reuters sees that, quote, China commissioned 21 gigawatts of coal power plant capacity in the first half of 2025, a new report found on Monday, the highest since 2016, even as the country is building record amounts of clean energy, a response to power shortages and blackouts in 2021 and 2022, end quote. Of course, they don't get into the share of China's total energy output produced by these record amounts of clean energy. And nor do such considerations stop academics from posting, and Canadian pundits from reposting, things like, quote, want to lose to China, discontinue wind power, end quote. If only they had Google on their computers. Or in this case, a question mark key. In the newsletter, we then say that if you want to be popular at parties, admittedly not a subject on which we are experts, it might be best to avoid an I told you so attitude. But at the same time, someone who did call it ahead of time surely deserves some credit, if not a canapé. Including my writing scornfully in the Ottawa Citizen about attribution science before it was even invented on January 6, 1998. So far back, kids, you can't find it online. In that piece, after warning that a theory that predicts everything predicts nothing, I derided another columnist's line, quote, climate experts are hesitating to blame the worst ice storm in recorded history on global warming. but members of Jean Chrétien's federal cabinet are privately conceding that this is more than a freak of nature, end quote. And how would a bunch of politicians, who, I observed, seem not to have a science degree among them, know such things? Simple. The theory was structured so that anyone could instantly attribute anything bad to climate change post facto, even blaming an ice storm on warming. Now it's called attribution science. But as Rudyard Kipling warned long ago, giving something a long name doesn't make it better. And as Roger Pilkey Jr. just warned, the IPCC's half-hearted resistance to this philosophical and scientific rubbish appears decisively to have collapsed. The new plan is that instead of looking for long-term patterns, they're going for instant gotcha under the guidance of, yes, it's our old enemy again. Quote, World Weather Attribution co-founder Frederica Otto has been put in charge of the chapter, along with another academic who focuses on extreme event attribution, end quote. Told you so. As we also did on climate models, namely that they're essentially worthless at predicting climate. And yet they remain extremely popular with people who like the dismal world they wrongly predict. For instance, Bloomberg Green just wrote that, quote, the ghost of Hurricane Katrina haunts catastrophe modelers. Catastrophe modeling has improved in the last 20 years, but experts say risk assessments are still plagued by blind spots, end quote. Oh, really? The models don't understand or predict? Then why do we keep getting bombarded with spuriously precise attribution of extreme events and the dreadful future that awaits if we don't ban carbon? In the newsletter, we also continue our Have It Both Ways series with a look this time at those disappearing Pacific coral atolls, one of the most popular visuals for climate alarmists after polar bears and windstorms. A 2006 study of the tropical Pacific says, quote, the analysis clearly indicates that sea level in this region is rising. We expect that the continued and increasing rate of sea level rise and any resulting increase in the frequency or intensity of extreme sea level events will cause serious problems for the inhabitants of some of these islands during the 21st century, end quote. 4 years later, another study said that as seas rise, the coral base grows and sediment accumulates. And using aerial photography, they showed that most small islands had remained stable or even grown, with only 14% of them having net land loss. So, they told us so, but both ways, which kind of spoils the effect. Oh, and speaking of surprise at the lack of loss of Arctic sea ice, the study underlying the news stories we referred to earlier by Harry Stern of the University of Washington was focused on September sea ice extent and went so far as to call it a regime shift, which means something changed, but they're not sure what or why. All they are sure of is that it's the opposite of what everyone predicted was going to happen, so what everyone predicted was going to happen is going to happen. Stern even presents a graph of particular importance given the tendency for mutual accusations of cherry-picking on this file because it presents both options, the alarmists' linear trend since 1979 on the left and the skeptics' flatline since the regime shift on the right. Clearly, the right side fits the data better, but Stern balks, saying it, quote, may at first seem hard to explain, the Earth continues to warm, and the Arctic is warming faster than the global average, IPCC 2021, end quote. And then he surveys various explanations of why the ice will soon start vanishing again. And if it doesn't, who are you going to believe? A smart computer or some Dumbo ice? Finally, from the CO2science.org archive, Eleusis guineensis, or African oil palm, is a very important commercial plant native to Central and West Africa and parts of Asia. And CO2 Science reports that a 2010 experiment where five-month-old seedlings were exposed to 300 parts per million more CO2 in the air resulted in a 105% boost in leaf growth. And okay, one study does not make a plantation, but it does plant a seed. For CDN, I'm John Robson, and I know an empty wallet when I, as I was saying, please do send contributions.